The following program has been brought to you by Rolling Press, a family-run, eco-friendly printing company. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
All right, thank you for tuning in to the Heritage Radio Network. You are listening to a special studio session. I'm your host today, Erin Fairbanks, and we got some sweet talk on the horizon for you. We're on the line with Charlie Frank, founder and managing partner of Zingerman's Candy Manufactory. Charlie, welcome to the show.
Oh, wow. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, we're excited to hear a little bit more about your candy journey. So let's maybe push back and start at the beginning. How did you kind of get into the sweets arena?
Boy, you know, it's going to sound cliche, but I have vivid memories of a wonderful candy shop in my hometown when I was in grade school. And that story comes up when people ask me in Zingerman's today. I bring that story up because my mom never knew I went. And one day, the lady met my mom and mentioned me, and a cat was out of the bag. And I didn't know that until I was in my 20s. So I thought I was sneaking all the while and didn't know that people knew what I was doing. But, you know, I just love sugar. So I was lucky enough to grow up and do it for a living.
So can you tell us, when you were a kid, were there particular candies or sweets that were your go-to?
You know, I don't want to sound cheap, but I was really, this was a penny candy store, and she had it set up so that the top shelf was a penny, the next shelf down was a nickel, then it went to a dime, and so I would just love filling that little sack with, you know, whatever candies I could work with from the top right down to the bottom shelves. And so I'd figure out, you know, how far I could spend 50 cents and how much I could get. And, you know, I was just totally into it that way. And so that's kind of like the memory that I have. You know, it was kind of tied to how much money did you have and how much could you get for it.
Yeah, I feel you. So, I mean, we had the same kind of setup at the store across the street where I grew up, and I definitely have a sweet tooth myself. Now, well, fast forwarding a little bit, you ended up at the Culinary Institute of America. How did you decide to make that jump into cooking school?
Well, you know, it was not just candy. I mean, I love to cook, too. I mean, I love to eat. And I think a lot of kids just naturally like to be in the kitchen, you know, with their parents and everything else. And for me, it just kind of kept going. And, you know, one day I decided, hey, you know, I could go to school for this. Quit the University of Michigan, went to the culinary after a year of, you know, working in a restaurant because it was a prerequisite. And from there, it just seemed to take off. I mean, I was in love. And when I got to the culinary, it was like, wow, this is really great. Surrounded by people that love to do what I love to do. And it just never stops, really. So that's how I ended up at the culinary. I actually snuck into there, too. A friend of mine was already a student and dressed me up like a student and waltzed me around for a few days. And then I took the official tour and decided that's where I wanted to be. So that was the campus in Hyde Park at the time. That was the late 80s.
Okay. And so after finishing up that program, which, you know, is a pretty intense thing to do. From there, did you head into savory from there, or did you stay in the pastry realm?
You know, from there, I did head into savory, but I worked in small restaurants, so even though I was on the line and doing, you know, saute and grill and all that, it was a small enough place, and it seemed no matter where I went, that I also got to do pastry, too. So not only did I do the hotline, but I prepped all day and did desserts and stuff like that. So I always got a chance to never get away from it. And finally, you know, to go to a hotel and do nothing but pastry, I mean, that was like the cat's meow. Now, interspersed in there, I did manage to do a short stint at Zingerman's, the delicatessen in downtown Ann Arbor. And, you know, I didn't think I wanted to stay at a deli, so I left there and went out into the world and did more work and never really found what I was exposed to at the deli. And so in 2001, I came back, and I've been here ever since.
So you came back not to the deli, though, right? To the bakehouse.
That's correct, right. By the time I came back, I was pretty darn sure that, you know, pastry was definitely the line that I wanted to be in. Now, later, like I'd say maybe 8 years after I returned, you know, doing some research, I learned that in history, people were either hard confectioners or soft confectioners. And so I found out that what I really loved is what's called hard confectionery, and that would be, you know, cooking sugar on a pan on top of the stove. If you're a soft confectioner, you're baking, and that's fine too, but what it, none of it was bread, for instance. So it's baking, but it was baking cakes, and it was, you know, cooking sugar and working with chocolate and loving butter and all of that.
So how did you make the transition from, you know, baking to the hard confectionery? I mean, did you propose a new product to Frank and Amy, or did you kind of fool around on the side until you had something that you thought would be compelling? I mean, what were some of those first moments like?
Well, all of the above, really. When I returned to the bakehouse, when I returned to Zingerman's and came to the bakehouse, I had already been exposed to their vision. You know, Zingerman's has this vision for the future, and at the time, their vision was for 2009. And part of that was that they wanted to have all these other new businesses and that somebody would come in and they'd be passionate about something and, you know, they would launch it from there. And so it was a very entrepreneurial approach that kind of drew me back. When I knocked on their back door of the bakehouse, I didn't know if they were hiring or not. I just knew I wanted to be back. And from the very beginning, right in our interviews even, I said, look, I want to have my own business. And they said, great, you've got to go on. You know, a good pastry background, we need a pastry manager, why don't you come in here first and see what it's like? And as you know, Zingerman's is not quite like every other business out there, and so I did that. And after about a year or two, they said, okay, you know, back to your idea. And so through pastry, we launched our candy bar line, the Zang Bars, and it was a line item in pastry's offerings for a number of years, and that's kind of how it got started. So we started making nougats and caramel and everything else, along with all the pastries that we were responsible for every day. So kind of snuck in there again and started making candy bars and selling them like a pastry. And it fit because what we really liked is having candy being fresh because it tasted better, just like everything else that's fresh. And so there isn't a whole lot of fresh candy out there, and for us it was just a natural, great ingredients, you know, better tasting food and everything. It just worked.
Nice. You're making me a little bit hungry. I just had some some pizza here at Roberta's where the studio is located, and definitely that sweet tooth is kicking in. I think we're going to move to just a short break, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the Zazang and a little bit more about the history of candy, so hang tight.
Okay, sure.
You're listening to Torchlight by Rectech on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
Just tuning in, we are on the line with Charlie Frank of the Zingerman's Candy Manufactory. And Charlie, just before the break, you were talking about the Zazang Bar. So why don't you break it down for us? Because this is no ordinary candy bar. Can you take us through kind of the production steps, but also what are the components that obviously make it so special?
Well, one of the things that we begin with are really great ingredients. And like I said, our passion is sugar. It's all the things you can do with sugar, all the different kinds of sugar that you, that are out there. And I just started with stuff that I liked, and it was peanut butter nougat, and it was caramel made out of muscovado sugar. And we started putting these things together, and the original Zang just happened. And we call it the original because it's the first one we did. There were other flavors to follow, but the original is what we started with. And it's peanut butter nougat. It's got muscovado caramel. Around that, it has peanuts that are roasted fresh with butter and sea salt. And then the whole thing's dipped in a dark chocolate, about a 65% dark chocolate. And that's the original. I love it. I eat one every day, and it just never gets old. It's fresh, so the nougat is soft, the peanuts are crispy, There's just enough salt there to bring the flavors out and give everything balance. And it's got a nice aroma. There's just everything about it I love. I'll eat one till the day I die.
You're like, find something you love and stick with it. So
it is our most popular flavor too, by far.
The Zazangus. Well, so I'm curious, you know, in if you can maybe enlighten us, and excuse me if I'm putting you on the spot here, but of a little bit of an overview of the candy kind of history or culture in our country. I mean, I definitely grew up, you know, eating things that were in plastic wrappers on a shelf, you know, at the deli across the street. But was there a point before that where it was kind of the norm to get a candy bar like the one you're describing in the Zazang?
Well, not to my knowledge. And, you know, nowadays, of course, that was 12 years ago. Nowadays, there are some that are available out there. You can find them. But I don't think at the time anybody was making candy bars like you were producing a pastry. And at Zingerman's Bakehouse in the pastry department, you know, there's a two-day turnaround. Orders come in one day, you make them the next, and they're at the customer by the following morning. And so it's very fresh. It's meant to be eaten. It's made not to save. And so when you make candy like that, everything translates. It's all the textures are the way you want them to be. All the flavors are the way that you want them to be. And I don't think that a whole lot of people are willing to do that kind of work for candy. Now, it is an uphill battle to tell everybody, hey, this isn't like every candy bar that's out there. Now, we also made the distinction that this isn't a chocolate bar. Now, people will look at it and they'll see chocolate because everything's on the inside. But our passion is what's on the inside. So each bar that we make is based on a different way of cooking sugar, basically. In the original, it's an aeration. So you're whipping egg whites, you're adding hot sugar and honey to it, and you're making this wonderful, this nougat. You know, it's kind of a soft, chewy, depending on how much you cook it. There's caramel in there that you caramelize sugars and developing flavors. That's the original. In the cashew cow, it's brittle. So we make cashew brittle, and that's where the sugar just kind of shatters when you bite it, and it's actually brittle. We have another bar that's an aeration, and then we have what the fudge, where it's a super saturation. It's, you know, if you think of fudge, and you're making all these teeny little crystals, and you're working them really super fine, and when you bite it, they just kind of melt in your mouth. So we're taking the long way around to make a great-tasting candy bar. Now, you can eat it fast, but I don't think a lot of people are willing to go through all of the effort that it takes to make a really well-built candy bar. And it's a short shelf life, too. We want people to just have these, you know, the store people that are selling these 60 days. And most people can do that. We have a really low minimum, and we tell our people, look, you can't just buy this and leave it on the shelf for 6 months. It's not going to be the way we intended it. So a short shelf life kind of would keep people from wanting to do what we do. But we love it, so we do it.
Well, if you're out there listening, if you're in the New York area and Charlie's Candy Talk is making you hungry, you can find their bars at Court Street Grocers and Brooklyn Larder. But for a full list, just visit the website, www.zingermanscandy.com. Now, Charlie, how did you go from, you know, launching the single bar to launching a candy business?
Well, first we had to launch the bar. Like I said, nobody was doing it. There wasn't any benchmark. You know, we couldn't look at anybody else just to see what they were doing. At the time, the rage was flavoring chocolate, you know, putting inclusions into chocolate, spices and things like that. And people are still doing it. There's a great market for it. There were a lot of people doing individual chocolates for a long time. You know, think of cordials and, you know, little bonbons and stuff. That's not what we wanted. We wanted to do candy bars. And there weren't a whole lot of people that were doing that. So it took a while. I mean, years. We sold candy bars out of the bakehouse for about 6 years before we turned it into a business. And what we wanted was a little bit of history for ourselves. Since there was nobody to look at, we kind of had to say, okay, well, what can we do? And so 6 years later, we thought, you know what, this is getting some traction. We're getting them out all over the place. And so we decided it was time. And so we turned it into Zingerman's eighth business. And that was in, I think, 2009.
Awesome. Well, congratulations. So,
well, thank you very much.
you know, aside from your now radio fame as being a guest here on the Heritage Radio Network, what does the future hold for Zingerman's Candy? I mean, what can we be looking to and getting excited about in the years to come?
Well, in the years to come, what we're really excited about is having our own retail space on Zingerman's South Side. And that's where all the producers are now. The bakehouse is here, and actually I'm renting space from the bakehouse. But we don't have our own retail, so we really want to have the kind of shop where people of all ages, kids and adults, and can come in and have the experience that I had when I was a kid and just sort of be in love with these wonderful treats in a shop that captures your attention and makes you feel like, you know, you're in a very special place. So we want to have our own space. We want to have our own retail. And there's so much fun to have with sugar. We're doing candy bars now. We're branching out into other things like, you know, for Easter, actually, we're doing these fudge eggs that are peanut butter and jelly. It's just so much fun to come up with neat things to do with sugar and different ways to enjoy it and different flavors, different textures. That's what we're looking forward to, really. Today, we're experimenting with, you know, we're practicing dragon's beard, which is a Chinese way of, kind of, if you think of cotton candy, it's a way of pulling sugar into a zillion, million little strands so that it resembles like the beard on a dragon. And it's hard. You got to practice. And so that's what we're doing today. We had a few minutes and we thought we would play around. And that's what it's like. It's like playing. It's fun. That's what we have to look forward to. It's just a lot of fun and a lot of really fun things to eat and share with people.
Awesome. So definitely if folks are in the Ann Arbor area, I would recommend that they try and get on your radar. But as far as folks who are located in other parts of the country who are maybe aspiring candy enthusiasts or want to do a little bit of experimenting at home, I mean, are there any resources that you would recommend or any kind of safe starting points for someone who wants to play around with candy in their own kitchen?
Well, you know, a good starting point would be boiling sugar. And when you read historical books, like some of the first books that were written on confectionery, they all start with boiling sugar and beginning to understand the stages that you get at boiling sugar when it gets hotter and hotter and hotter. So, you know, learning what the consistencies are and then what you can do with those consistencies. You know, if you're making a nougat, you're going to cook the sugar to a different degree of thickness and heat than you would if you were making a caramel, for instance. So my suggestion would be to just start playing around with sugar at the stove, you know, and that includes burning some so that you know what that's like. You know, everybody's got to burn some so they know where their limits are. But just tons of practice, lots and lots of practice. Just get at the stove and start boiling water with sugar in it and, you know, pay attention and just be inspired that way, really.
Yeah, and I would say from personal experience, remember that you can't stick your finger into boiling sugar water and then put it in your mouth to cool it down.
I will tell you, though, that in school you're not given a thermometer, and so you're given a bowl of ice, and you hold your hand in that ice because that's what people would do way back in the day. You hold your hand in the ice, and when you need to know what softball is, it really means a ball that is soft. And the only way you can do that is with your fingers. So you hold your hand in the ice water. Now, we don't do this where we are working now. But if you're holding your hand in the ice water, you can dip it in there for a second. And what you're left with is the sugar that's cooled down quickly. And then you can see what consistency you're at. You're touching it. You're in tune with your food. A thermometer's like the next best thing.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to play it safe and hang tight with the thermometer. Charlie, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing a little bit of the history of the candy. And definitely, folks, if you want to find out more, you want to find some of those sweet things, visit them at www.zingermanscandy.com.
Right. Well, you're welcome, and thank you very much. It's my pleasure.
All right. This, like all 30 of our live weekly shows, are available as a free download through iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher Smart Radio or visit our website, www.heritageradionetwork.org. If you like what you hear, and I think you will, definitely click that donate tab, become a member, and keep tuning in. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.